BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Now, I saw a wonderful documentary the other day that came out in 2007. And you remember how much I love the arts?
Yes, I do. You were talking about it earlier.
Absolutely love arts. And if there's one thing I love more than the arts, it's rock and roll.
Right.
And when the two come together, life doesn't get any better for Buckles.
You're cool.
Yeah.
You're so cool.
A culture show special from 2007, this was, with Lou Reed talking to Six Music's very own lovely Lauren Laverne about why he was recreating his album Berlin from 1973 for a series of live shows. And it was a really great program, 1 hour with sort of overviews of Reed's career intertwined with performances from Berlin and putting the album in context. And then a very disarming series of encounters between Lou and Lauren herself. Now, Lou Reed is notoriously ornery, if that's the word, and difficult with interviewers and journalists and that kind of thing. I'll play you a clip right now of Lou conducting another interview with a young TV journalist from a Swedish culture program. This is on YouTube. You can find it. Towards the end of the interview, this journalist, who's like a young guy and clearly quite in awe of Lou Reed and doing his best and having quite a hard time with Lou Reed in this hotel room or whatever. The journalist asks cautiously if Lou has any prejudices of any kind, and this is his answer.
Do you have any prejudice?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like journalists.
Journalists?
Oh, I despise them.
Why?
They're disgusting. Mainly the English. They're pigs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What nationality was that journalist?
He was Swedish.
That's okay.
So at the end he's like, yeah, that's a good point. They are pigs, aren't they? Yeah. So that's your classic standard Lou Reed for a lot of journalists. So Lauren Laverne makes this point at the beginning of the documentary and says that she was a little bit trepidatious.
Mm.
But Lou likes Lauren. He thinks she's absolutely great. And he melts in front of her and is just the model of smiley charm right the way through this interview. He loves all her questions. Everything is just dandy as far as he's concerned with Lauren Laverne. Here's a clip right now of the two of them watching some footage of Lou in the 60s when his hair was big and shaggy, and the sexy chemistry really begins to bubble here. Have a listen.
Look at my haircut. An afro.
I thought it looked pretty good.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're getting on well. Nice little compliment from Lauren there. And Lou Reed really likes it. You know, that's very nice. Then Lauren asks Lou if he was bothered by the very harsh critical reception that met the release of the album Berlin in 73. So Lou brushes away this suggestion as if to say, oh, come on, Lauren. I don't know what you've heard, but I'm, you know, I don't want it to stand in the way of us enjoying some very sexy time together, my whole relationship with journalists. Let's have a listen.
Because the reviews were really, really harsh. And, I mean, did that affect you? I know that you don't care for the opinion of journalists too much, but...
Well, believe it or not, there's some journalists that I'm quite attached to.
Really?
Yes.
Yes. And one of them sitting right in front of me, and she's got blonde hair, and she's got Lauren. Here's another clip right now. It's time to actually ask her out, I think, on the program. Lou can't wait until after the interview is over to ask Lauren out. So he decides more or less to do it on the show while they're
recording.
The
relative ages here?
So Lou is, well, Lauren, how old is she? She's 31 or something, early 30s. Lou is 100, I think. No, Lou must be in his early 60s by now, I would say, or maybe mid-60s.
Highly compatible.
I mean, Bowie is mid-60s now, I think, isn't he? So Lou's got to be around that mark. Pretty well preserved in his craggly way and looking quite cool in this interview. But anyway, here's Lou more or less asking Lauren out.
How have you changed since the release of the record first time around to kind of...
How have I changed?
Yeah, have you changed?
Are you,
you
kidding?
Know?
In that amount of time, how have I changed? In so many ways, we'd probably have to sit down, have many, many drinks to enumerate how I've changed in that amount of time.
So let's go on. Let's go and have them
enumerate.
After the interview. I mean, you hear how soft his voice is. Like, normally he's so taciturn and gruff. you get like monosyllabic answers out of him generally, or, you know.
What happened next, do you think?
Well, they have to wrap the interview up finally. I mean, it's a
heartbreaking.
It's a shame. And here is how the interview is concluded, leaving no one in any doubt as to where Lou wishes the relationship was going.
Well, Lou, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, for me too.
Good luck with the gigs. Thank you.
I guess you'll be one of the London journalists that I'm really in love with.
Thank you, Lou.
Sure.
And then, wow, have you talked to Lauren about
this? No. And by this time, Lauren is sort of thinking, maybe I will have a little slice of Lou. Even though she's happily married.
Sexy tortoise action.
With a child. Yeah, exactly. She's sort of thinking, wow, flipping it. Is that your Lou?
Yeah. That's him going in for a kiss.
I thought that was the way Bob Dylan sounded when he went in for a kiss with Alicia Keys.
Yeah, that's the same.
The sexy old
the
rock.
Same, the sexy old
the
tortoise.
The rock tortoise.
You know the way they pull little bits of lettuce into their mouth, like a centimetre at a time on the tongue, and take a look. That's what will be going on there. Lauren Lettuce Laverne. Being chomped up.
I got a bit of your blonde hair now.
Wow.
It's Saturday morning on Six Music. Adam and Joe are in the studio. They're gonna do their radio program. It lasts for 3 hours. In the show they play music and songs. In between they talk a lot about things. And people text in, that's about it. Adam's in the left seat, Joe is in the right seat. There was an argument about which seat to take. It's Saturday, Saturday, Adam and Joe on Saturday. Everybody's looking forward to the two-man talking. Saturday, Saturday, Six Music on Saturday. Everybody's looking forward to the rambling, 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 yeah! Rambling, rambling. What? Fun, 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 fun. Now it's time to start the show.
So that's been a phenomenal success for you, Adam, hasn't it? Because what's the story? Your mum...
My mum paid for me...
Your birthday, right?
Yeah, for my birthday. She paid for me to go into a studio and have a track produced by a couple of songwriting geniuses. Mm. And I never thought anything would happen with it. I went in there. It was a nice, fun present. My mum's always wanted me to be a pop star, is the thing.
Ah. And you popped it up on YouTube, just expecting some of your friends to check it out.
Exactly.
And then what happened?
Well, it started to snowball. The first evening, I was on 50 views. And by next day lunchtime, I had 55 views.
Next day lunchtime?
Yeah.
That's the new day of the week.
Next day lunchtime. But then after that, I think someone posted it or someone tweeted about it.
What?
I think maybe Stephen Fry tweeted it or something. And I got 100 million views in 24 hours.
And some people have been quite cruel about it.
Some people are saying that it's the worst thing they've ever heard in their
lives.
How
does that make you feel?
It makes me feel a little bit depressed.
Right.
And sad. And beleaguered.
But you don't, you're not going to listen to the haters. You're not going to let them affect you.
No, I'm going to carry on making bad jingles. That's because that's what I feel I've been put on the earth to do. And also, I've made a huge amount of money from.
Have
the whole
you? Because there are different rumors going around. Some saying you've only made a few thousand dollars.
No, I've made millions.
Others saying you've made millions.
Yeah, millions.
And what are you going to do with millions?
I thought I'd squander most of them. I'd give a little bit to charity, like a jingle charity.
Is there a jingle charity?
There is now. Yeah, I'm setting one up. For
yourself.
For jingle writers who... for the guy that wrote the, hey, Crusader, have you any nuts?
We've got mixed nuts
and
raisins.
And salted cashews.
Yeah, because he's getting on.
He's getting on and he hasn't had any good jingle ideas recently. I don't know if that's true. That might not be, true.
Really insulted.
So, yeah. But, obviously people are comparing it to Rebecca Black. And
Oh,
and the whole Friday thing, which I think is a little reductive. But how did you feel about Rebecca Black while we're on the subject? That's a good segue.
How did I feel?
This is how radio works. How do you feel about Rebecca Black while we're
on the subject? I felt like everyone else did. I felt amused, then saddened, happy again. Because I saw her on Ellen, I think.
On Alien?
Ellen.
Oh.
You know? And yeah. She looked very happy.
Did she? Yeah.
Yeah, she looked upbeat. She weren't going to listen to no haters.
She's a nice person.
Yeah.
Her mum's not quite such an appeaser.
Oh, I haven't seen the mum.
Yeah, she's justifiably furious.
Is she?
Yeah. Because it's cyberbullying, isn't it?
It is. She's only little.
On a massive scale. She's 13. Mm. And the thing is, when I first saw the thing, right, I didn't realise it was in the low millions when I first saw the Friday video. Mm. And I thought, well, this is amusing and a little bit bland and ha, ha, ha. But I didn't think it was the worst song ever made. You know what I mean? Have you listened to Radio 1 recently? There's a lot of stuff out there that's quite a lot worse than Rebecca Black.
It doesn't sound too far off a Justin Bieber track, does it?
No, I don't think so. It doesn't. I mean, you know, Fly Like a G6. I'm sorry, but I would take Rebecca Black over that one.
I haven't heard that one.
That stinky pile of old poo.
Hey.
It's a ridiculous kind of...
What's just, Fly Like a G6? I haven't heard that.
Fly Like a G...
Have you got it in your computer?
Popping bottles in the ice.
Because maybe that's, like maybe that's a basis for a future Song Wars.
When we drink, we do it right. Getting slizzard. That's where getting slizzard comes
really?
From.
Really? Yeah. It does feel like a kind of new type of music has been innovated, doesn't it?
Fly like a G6.
Do you think Rebecca Black is the start of something?
G6. Well, a lot of people feel that she's the end of something. The end of all music and civilization.
The end of times.
No, I'm happy with Rebecca Black. And that's a fantastic, fun anthem, I think, for the weekend.
You needed cheering up because you were feeling rather low. But now you're doing brilliant thanks to Adam and to Joe and their podcast.
We got this email this week. Elliot Line sent us this. My 3-year-old daughter, Alyssa May Line, loves the Retro Text the Nation jingle and wanted to record her own version. She can't read yet, so she had to learn the lyrics first. I never know whether she'll say bin or trash, but on this occasion, she plumped for trash. Please use it as you see fit. Well, it was charming, I thought, so we certainly will use it. Here is the remarkably talented, for 3 years old, Alyssa May Line singing the Retro Text the Nation jingle.
I listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel the cute frustration, but I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. Now the troubles have disappeared, because Retro Text the Nation's here. Now a letter might be read out, instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about.
Wow, that's very, very good. You know, the thing about that is she's really hitting it rhythmically there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's extremely sophisticated. We may have a prodigy on our hands.
Right, right. We were talking earlier about maybe doing a Song Wars with cool ways of, you know, unique ways of delivering a song. She's got her style worked out there.
How long is it before, I mean, we've got the Smith children, Willow and Jaden.
Yeah.
They must be, what, 10, 11? How long is it before we have a 3 or 4-year-old in the charts?
She's ready, man. I would buy a single by Alyssa.
We were talking about having a unique voice that's instantly recognisable.
Yeah.
There is one.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's going to be a shame when she gets too sophisticated and start hitting all the right bits of rhythm.
She'll be over the hill by 4.
Oh, I know.
Sad, really.
I liked her early stuff. When she got to be 4. So, yeah, we were talking about what you've been up to in the last 15 months since we've been off the air. We only got back last week, of course. Thank you very much for getting in touch with some of your messages in the week.
What's she called, the singing girl?
Alyssa May Line.
Alyssa, you're talented. Thank you so much for sending that in.
And thanks,
that's
Elliot,
lovely.
For sending that in. Really appreciate it. Here's a message, an email that was sent in by John Chalton in Timperley.
So the subject was just, how are you doing? What's been going on?
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Yeah.
We had a variety of responses, but this one was a fairly specific observation about something that happened. I was on a very busy train from Bristol to Manchester, and every seat was full. I saw a young woman with a great big suitcase on the seat next to her. She hadn't paid for the seat, so I asked if I could sit there instead. She tutted and put the suitcase in the legroom in front of her, allowing her very little actual legroom. As we pulled into Birmingham and people were getting up to leave the train, the woman suggested, "Shouldn't one of us move so I can have more room?" I stood up to allow her to get past, but she didn't move. She meant, could I move? So I stood there like a wally for about a minute or so before I took a seat across the aisle. As I looked back at the woman, I saw an enormous whale-like man park his derriere in the seat that I had vacated. I caught her eye and gave her a smug grin and a knowing nod. He spells nod, K-N-O-D. A knowing nod of satisfaction. At the exact same time, I got double cramp in my calf and hamstring. Ooh. I managed to internalise my screams of pain, but I felt the balance of the universe was the overall winner in the sorry situation, says John Chalton from Timperley.
So you travel on trains a lot, don't you? So you like a good train politics story.
Sure I do. I really do. I mean, my ways of avoiding those kind of situations, I only really travel at very specific times now. I only go...
You're
like,
so uptight about time.
You're very uptight about time, Adam. I know. I can completely sympathise. At those moments when you can't avoid being on a packed train and stuff like that happens, I spend the whole journey with just a flutter of anxiety, trying to hold on to my seat and make sure no one sits in my seat next to me, or I've got as much room as I possibly can, and there's no one opposite me making a phone call, a really loud phone call, because that would ruin my journey.
I want to do a radio show with that French director. He's much more relaxed about things than you are. And I hear his short film's really good.
It is good. I never said it wasn't.
Here's one from Hannah, who's listening in Japan. The highlight of her 15 months is as follows. A slightly sozzled and rakish Bill Nye mistook me for an old friend in the biscuit section of Fortnum and Mason's. Now, that's pretty good, isn't it?
To be mistakenly spotted by a famous person.
Yeah, we're talking the highlight of a 15-month period. That's a good one, don't you think? Bill Nye good. Coming up to you and in the biscuit section of Fortnum and Mason. The biscuit section.
Why are you saying it like that?
I don't know. I'm trying to give it extra emphasis to make it worthy of
being
read out.
Is that how you
out.
Give emphasis?
Leave me alone.
Stop talking like that.
Yes. People sit up and listen when you talk like that.
That's a good one.
Thanks, mate.
What would you try if someone did that to you, if Nye came up to you, right, and started mistakenly...
Hello.
Would you take advantage of it and then say, hey, listen, while we're chatting, let's get to know each other. Do you fancy going over to the biscuit section? And because then he would say, no, that's okay. I've got to go and see Tilda Swinton later on. I'm a bit tooty.
He's got to go to the Tilda Swinton section.
Here's one from Daniel Swindlehurst. Not entirely dissimilar. Dear Adam and Joe, a few months ago I was walking down the high street when I saw Kofi Annan.
I was walking down the high street
when I saw Kofi Annan. He was walking towards me carrying a co-op carrier bag. He was carrying a co-op carrier bag. At first I thought it was Morgan Freeman, but I quickly realised... I quickly realised it was the former UN Secretary General. Do you think Morgan Freeman has that a lot?
Yeah.
My God, it's Kofi Annan. Oh, no, wait, it's just the sonorous-voiced actor man. I nodded to him. Kofi nodded back. I should point out that I live in Geneva and Co-op is quite a high-class supermarket over here. I don't think it's got anything to do with the British one. Love you, bye! Kisses and hugs from Daniel Swindlehurst.
What a story. Not to suggest that the British Co-op is anyway down.
No, exactly.
It's very, very, very good store.
It's thoroughly
distributes
salubrious.
Its profits in a very equitable manner.
That's right.
Here we go. Here's a good one from Sam Hawkins. When I was walking, I felt a tickling sensation in my ear. It was the end of a cotton bud that had come off in my ear. It was black and gross. It fell out on a street corner.
What?
I just stood and looked at it in the gutter. I felt sick. Also, on returning to university... on returning to university after my Christmas, some of my sister's pants were stuck to my jumper.
What?
I didn't realise till I was on the tube, oh dear.
Say that again. Some of my...
What an email.
Some of my sister's pants.
I'm going to read the whole thing again. When I was walking, I felt a tickling sensation in my ear. It was the end of a cotton bud that had come off in my ear. It was black and gross. It fell out on a street corner. I just stood and looked at it in the gutter. I felt sick. Also, on returning to university after Christmas, some of my sister's pants was stuck to my jumper. I didn't realise until I was on the tube. Oh, dear.
Does he mean like a section of the pants?
No, just a pair of pants. I suppose static electricity.
Well,
They got stuck. No, some of my sister's... Well, she has more than one pair of pants.
He's got more than one pair of pants stuck to his jumper.
No, some of... It is slightly weirdly written, but no, it's just one pair of pants out of many pairs of pants.
So he doesn't just mean like the gusset was stuck to his...
No, he doesn't mean that. But it's been a tough year for Sam Hawkins, so well done, mate.
It's I mean, I can just
picture him standing on that street corner looking down at this little black cotton blood being... And little did you know that on his back, simultaneously, is a pair of pants.
Watch out, here's another little bit. It might be wicked, it might be one of the weaker bits, but that's cool. I like weaker bits. I can handle up to three.
We got an interesting email from a listener called Connor Shaw. It says, "Hey, Buck Skywalker and Corn Vader."
Yeah, I like it.
"I was on iPlayer the other day when I saw that Points of View was on the page. I was very disappointed to find out that they have changed the Points of View... dot, dot, dot. Then the email just ended. Email suddenly stopped.
Right.
And it said from Connor Shaw, he'd CC'd his mum.
Uh-huh.
He'd send it to us and CC'd his mum.
Oh, she needs to know.
Yeah, and the email just stopped there. So I was shocked, because you know on this programme we follow Points of View and we're big fans of its theme tune, aren't we?
Blah boobity bye.
Let's hear the old Points of View theme tune, please.
Blah boobity bye. Blah boobity bye. Blah blah boobity bye. Blah 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 blah.
Bing bing. It's one of the most uplifting, lovely theme tunes in television history.
I always feel that you need to stress to the listeners, though, that maybe aren't so familiar with our rambles and whiffles and waffles, that is real. That's real. That's not you.
And it's been the real theme tune to Points of View for years.
Yeah.
And we did we talked about this a year ago or something. Maybe
longer.
Maybe longer than that.
Longer.
Anyway, Connor remembers that, and he was shocked when he looked on the iPlayer, and you can see this yourself. I had a look as well. This is the new Points of View theme. Here is the new Points of View theme, and when you hear this, something's missing. You'll quickly pick up that something very critical is now missing.
Uh-huh.
Let's have a listen to the new theme.
What? So they've thought, well, it's a classic tune. We've got to keep the tune, but maybe the vocals were a little goofy, so we'll remove those.
Do you think they heard our segment and became embarrassed? Because we were suggesting that the blue boobity bar bars were maybe not too respectful of the content of the show. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it seemed...
Trivialising listeners' complaints.
It seemed like the theme music for a show watched by insane toddlers.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I was shocked... I was profoundly shocked.
Of course. Bereaved, I imagine you felt.
Boobity, boobity, boo-boos.
Blah, boobity, bye-ya.
The blah, boobity, bye-us had been taken off the song. So I contacted the Blah Boobities.
Did you?
Who are the group that sang the original song.
Yeah, they're headlining the Pyramid Stage this year.
They are. But
with the Wombles.
They're based in Norwich, actually.
Are they?
Yeah, very near you. They're one of Norwich's most popular a cappella groups.
Yeah.
And I contacted them on the phone and they were shocked. They were really shocked.
Hurt,
you know, I didn't know I'd be the person breaking the news. You would have expected they would have been told by the BBC, but they hadn't. The castle hadn't informed them.
That's shoddy.
So they were shocked. So I went down there and I had a talk to them and basically we tried to put it right.
Who did you speak to? Blah, Boobity or Baya?
Julian and... Julian, he's the main guy, Julian Staples.
Julian Staples Bluebiddy.
Yes.
His full name.
So we decided to try and set the record straight and put the... We decided to put the Bluebiddies back onto the song. But as we were doing it... I mean, they kind of lost it, you'll hear. I mean, the atmosphere was quite upbeat at the beginning of the recording, but... I don't know, it sort of broke down. And this is a bit sad, actually. This is the recording.
Why?
Why, Jeremy Vine?
Jeremy Vine.
What did we bloopity do? What did we ever bloopity do to you?
And it... the whole atmosphere got really morose. And then Gillian, who is on the falsetto, she just started freaking out and she knocked over the mic stand. Gee. And Julian tried to calm her down, and it just got really ugly.
Sure.
So it's a great shame, really. And they gave me this letter to read out.
The boobities.
Yeah, it says
another layer of fiction.
The letter says, "Dear,
on top of this huge fictional cake you baked."
The letter says, "Dear Boopity BBC Boo, why Boopity Y oh why? Did you take our Boopity Boopity Bar Bar singing off your show, blah, blah. Now, hang on. Dear Boopity BBC Boo, why Boopity Y oh why did you take our Boopity Bar Bar singing off your show, blah, blah?"
Hey.
That's what they want to say to Jeremy Vine and the producers.
Quite right. Well, I think the point of that has come across very strongly indeed.
I was quite drunk last night. I'm sorry.
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best?
It's Adam. Last week, I very confidently, we were talking about the bearded star of films like The Hangover and The Hangover 2.
Zach Galifianakis.
Right. And I extremely confidently said, no, it's pronounced Galifianakis. And there was a few messages from people saying
that you were Rongo Snodgrass.
Rongoloid. It's pronounced Zach Galifianakis. And I found a guy on YouTube who calls himself Pronunciation Book. And he's American, but he goes through various...
Despite the fact that he's an American and has absolutely no right to be tampering with the language,
goes through and defines for people the correct pronunciation of some commonly mispronounced words. Here he is pronouncing Zach Galifianakis for you.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, all right.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, okay, I get
Zach
that.
Galifianakis.
All right, I get the message. It's Zach Galifianakis. I'll never forget. The thing is that it's spelt Galifianakis, and I think it's because I learned how to spell it, I just felt so pleased and confident with myself.
You're too clever for your own good.
That's the thing.
Too analytical. That's too right. Much brain power.
Yeah.
Too much respect for letters.
Well, I thought that I would go through a few bits of other pronunciation with you. Chien. here's a short list of words for you.
Oh, is this a test?
To deal with. This is a little test for cornballs with this pronunciation test. So the first word, it's another name of a famous film star that Joe has to pronounce. It's the star of Donnie Darko. How would you pronounce that, Joe?
I would pronounce his name Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay, and let's find the pronunciation.
Oh, you know, but I'm vacillating because it might be Gyllenhaal.
Ah, well, you got to settle on one.
I'd go for the most conservative option, Gyllenhaal.
I would pronounce it Jake Gyllenhaal.
Well, now that I'm seeing it written down, the Jake is very straightforward. Gyllenhaal. So,
Gyllenhaal.
This is how I pronounce it, because the J, I think, is pronounced... The J is pronounced P like a P.
It's a silent
so,
T.
So, pook, pooke, chen, chen, chal.
Pooke, chen, chal.
Pooke, chen, chen, chal.
Here's the actual pronunciation according to Pronunciation Book on YouTube.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
So I was nearly there.
Nearly
Gyllenhaal,
there.
Gyllenhaal.
Here's a tough one that I only found out recently how to pronounce. A famous German writer.
I know this.
G-O-E-T-H-E.
Goethe.
Right, let's have the real pronunciation.
Goethe.
Yeah.
Goethe.
Yes, yeah, because I've read Goethe. A lot of Goethe.
Because you love Goethe.
I love Goethe.
See, I always...
I might read a little bit of Goethe right now. Thanks, I'm ready to continue.
My favourite is Goethe. I think he's a better writer.
Goethe.
Goethe. How about this? A word that means the political, economic, ideological or cultural power exerted by a dominant group over other groups.
Yeah, spelt H-E-G-E-M-O-N-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Hegemony.
You're going for hegemony.
Is that... hegemony.
Well, actually, I think...
Hegemony, it's both are right.
It's a question of where you're from. It's a transatlantic thing. So Pronunciation Book goes for...
Hegemony. Hegemony. Hegemony.
Hegemony. No, no,
and
no,
he
no,
puts
no.
the accent on the second
He's
syllable.
He's doing
there.
It like Hermione from Harry Potter.
Right, and that's another commonly mispronounced one. A lot of people going for Hermione and things like that. Mm. But yeah, I think hegemony is acceptable if you're from the UK. The Americans say hegemony. How about this? A word for an initial or early stage, I-N-C-O-H-A-T-E.
Well, this is a good one because I'm not sure I've ever said this out loud, but I've read it a lot. And in my head, it's well, I pronounce it phonetically, incohate. I've got this wrong, haven't I?
I don't know. I've always said incohate when I've said it out loud. How, let's see what pronunciation book says.
Incoate. Incoate.
No H in there.
Incoate.
Ah, but I like hate.
Exactly. You think it's nice to have a word with hate in it that doesn't mean hate.
Incohate.
Incohate. And finally, a famous German watch manufacturer, T-A-G-H-E-U-E-R.
These watches were very trendy when we were teenagers. Uh-huh. I had a big, horrible yellow one.
Did you?
An enormous, horrible yellow one.
And yeah, what about your watch?
And I used to pronounce it Taj Heuer.
Like the Taj Mahal.
Taj Heuer. No, Tag Heuer is what I used to say. Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
What's wrong with that?
That's what I'd go for. Let's see what the real one is.
Tag Heuer. Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
But you've got to have that haughty New England accent
Tag.
To get it. Tag Heuer.
Yeah, but Heuer is the key thing. I think the Tog or the Tog is, you know, that maybe that changes whether you're transatlantic or not.
Changes everything.
But Heuer, that's what you're going for. Tog Heuer. I would never have gone for that, like Tom Sawyer.
It's not an important one, though, is it, that one?
Isn't it?
I'm more keen on Jake Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. A pack of Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake
Gyllenhaal.
With a silent P.
If you want to challenge Adam and my pronunciation skills, then you can just send us words that we'll attempt to read out. adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
And we'll manglerize
them. What are the hardest ones, I wonder?
Well, you see, this was inspired partly by my mispronunciation of Galifianakis, but also Maddie Cutler's message. She says, "Hi, Cornmeister and Buckstongle, brackets, have I gone too far?" No. On the subject of egg corns and mispronunciation, I have a habit of mispronouncing names of fictional characters. Please see examples below. 1. Hermione from Harry Potter has been pronounced in my head Hermione for 14 years. 2. Penelope Pussycat from Looney Tunes, always pronounced as Penelope.
Penelope, that's good.
Yeah, this is hard to spell phonetically, so you just pronounce it the same as envelope. Do you think I have issues? Bye, Z's. Maddie Cutler, kiss, kiss, kiss. No, Maddie, you're pretty normal, I would say.
I can see what you are up to, ooh, while you are listening to this podcast.
Do you ever watch the repeats of that outer space show, you know, is it called Wonders of the Universe?
Is that the modern one with Professor Cox?
Brian Cox? Dr. Cox?
I don't think I've ever seen...
Have you never seen it?
The whole thing. No, I know that it's supposed to be very good.
You know that pleasurable thing when you're lying in bed and the sky at night comes on?
Yeah.
Do you ever watch that?
With Mr. Moore.
With Patrick Moore. And they show these incredible... you know, computer simulations and photos of distant galaxies.
Simulations?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a simulation. You know what? I never even used to watch that.
Really?
I could never get past Mr. Moore himself.
But you like space. You like Star
love
Trek
space.
And space stuff.
Absolutely love space. Want to live in space.
And there's a point at which that stuff becomes so sort of abstract and meaningless that it's weirdly soothing and awe-inspiring.
Sure.
And Professor Dr. Cox, on his amazing smash hit BBC One series, Wonders of the Universe, has taken this to new levels. They've got some incredible computer simulations of distant nebulae.
Yeah.
They're really stunning. And it's a big smash hit, this programme. And I think lots of people are watching it. But it really is really entrancing, even if you don't understand what the hell he's talking about.
Right.
It becomes like a sort of amazing abstract poetry or some kind of art installation. These incredibly beautiful simulations of galaxies done on computers with this awe-inspiring music playing behind it. And then the dulcet soft tones of Professor Cox telling you all these amazing names and mind-boggling statistics about these things.
Yeah.
It's quite a trippy experience. Here's a clip from the latest episode, episode 4. Have a listen to this.
This is the Lagoon Nebula. The Lagoon Nebula sits about 5,000 light-years from Earth, but it can still be seen with the naked eye because it's 100 light-years across and brightly lit by the hot, young, new star that sits at its centre. A giant called Herschel 36.
So it's 5,000 light-years from the Earth. It's 100 light-years across. It's a hot, new star called Herschel 36.
I've been reading about Herschel 36,
yes.
Yeah.
The hottest new star in the galaxy.
Sure.
He's huge. He's absolutely huge.
Isn't he going out with the lady with the haircut?
Yeah, and it's a difficult... Well, what lady with the haircut?
Tina Pimples.
Yes.
The one who was in An Education.
But it's a difficult relationship because they live a long way apart.
Right, galaxies apart.
Well, he's 5,000 light years away.
Sure.
And she's in Chingford.
What's the girl's name? The one I'm thinking of, the actress. You know, she's very famous.
With the haircut?
She's got a haircut. Carey Mulligan.
That's right, Carey Mulligan.
And she's going out with...
With Herschel 36.
Wow.
But it's a difficult relationship to sustain because of the distance.
Yeah.
And because he's 100 light years across.
That's age. I mean, imagine the phone bills.
No, but he's very fat.
Oh, I see. He's
100 light years across.
That's a little embarrassing.
It's a bit embarrassing socially, and he can't get out of that house.
Yeah. Why is... I mean, he's... What has he been eating? Galaxies?
I don't know.
Too many
possibly. Now, listen to this clip. So, as if that isn't awesome... Enough. Have
right.
a listen to this clip.
This newly born star is over 20 times more massive than our sun and burns much hotter, which makes the light that pours from its surface blue.
So it's 20 times more massive than the sun. This, we're still talking about Herschel 36.
I thought he was talking about his sun.
No, he's 20 times more massive than the sun and
right.
blue light pours from his surface.
Whoa.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Can you visualise Herschel 36?
Yeah, I think he's in the Blue Man Group, isn't he? He's like a big blue guy.
He's like one of the guys from Avatar. But if that isn't enough, then there is actually a star out there that dwarfs Herschel 36.
Justin Bieber.
No, that's not her name.
Oh.
Let Professor Cox tell you.
Mm-hmm.
7,500 light-years from Earth is a star that dwarfs even Herschel 36. Its name is Eta Carinae.
Right. So it's even bigger than Herschel 36.
I love Eta Carinae.
Eta Carinae.
Did you see her last film?
Well, she was in Avatar, I'm sure, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Oula Pupilala.
Yes.
Jake Sully, you are so stupid.
Does that mean anything to you, what you just heard?
It means that I love the sound of Brian Cox's voice. Have you ever heard, you know, Jeremy Dyson from The League of Gentlemen?
Yes.
He's got the same voice.
You're absolutely right. It's lovely, isn't it?
It's that lovely, you know, very nicely pronounced northern voice.
But the words he's saying, I mean, they're sort of meaningless, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, the measures he's talking
said, yeah.
about.
Without even thinking.
But the measures he's talking about are so, these things are so massive,
yeah.
they're beyond any... Any comprehension,
it
aren't they?
It boggles the mind.
They don't relate to anything on Earth or any experience at all.
No.
It's just bonkers.
I mean, yeah, he could just be making it up.
He could. I mean, for instance, if I made some awe-inspired music,
mm-hmm.
Do you think you'd be able to talk like him over it and just make the words up?
Sure.
Do you think?
Be easy.
Do you want to try that now?
Why not?
How long do you think you could go for?
Ages.
Really?
Sure.
And you just talk about how wide things are, how
yeah.
narrow they are, what colour light they... Well, let's kick in some music. I mean, this is music I made for this. Let's see how long you last.
Here it goes.
Look, really far, far away, it's a giant big thing, plate, like a plate, called Julia 19. Oh, it's ever so large and it's huge. Look at that, you could pile so much... pudding on the top of it. It's massive and great big. Further away from that even yeah. is Michael Nonceface 69,000.
How big?
It's really much bigger than even Julia 15 or whatever the number was that I said of the plate. It's so big it's like a big massive balloon or a house.
How wide?
Really, really wide. made like a road, a massive as wide as a big road.
What
about
colour? What colour?
It's incredibly green and glowing green, and bits of green toffees are coming off the top of it, and people are catching them in their mouths. It's massive, though. Imagine the most big toffee you ever saw. It's bigger than... it's bigger than that.
Do something bigger. Something bigger.
But dwarfing all those things ever so... I've exploded.
The universe exploded.
My Rumpelstiltskin.
It was too big. You overdone it.
T-H-E-A-D-A-M-M-S-N-J-O-E. O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast crew, baby. T-H-E-A-D-A-M, M-S-N-J-O-E. O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast crew, baby.
Do you approve of the groove?
No.
Well, does the groove make you move?
No.
Oh.
Now, Joe... You're a Bronholm fan, right?
I love Pierce Brosnan.
I mean, I think it's safe to say we both love Bronholm, but you're a particular aficionado of his noises and
yes.
exhortations.
Yes.
Mainly the non-verbal ones. I mean, not
non-verbal.
Like
I like every noise he makes.
Non, sort of, the more articulate, or the less articulate, the better, really, from Bronholm. He articulates...
Oh, he's a terribly good grunter.
With his grunts,
yeah.
Sure.
And when it comes to playing Bond in particular, it's very important to grunt if you're doing something, exerting some sort of effort.
Yeah.
Killing someone, saying something witty.
Getting tortured.
Hauling yourself up, yeah.
It's a trick that Craig misses.
My name's Bond. Yeah.
Did you ever see the film Taffin?
I've heard of the film Taffin.
Early Bronholm.
80s.
1988. He is an Irish tough guy debt collector, asked by his local community to help rid the town of developers bent on building a chemical plant on the outskirts of town.
What? Now, why did you end up watching Taffin?
Well, last weekend I did a gig. It was called Sod Cancer, and it was a charity thing, and I was there with a lot of wonderful comedians. And in the green room, we were bantering after we went on and did our sets. And I was talking to lovely Dave Armand and Justin Edwards, and they were... talking about Taffin, and saying, oh, yeah, I watched Taffin. I was like, why did you watch Taffin? And they called up this clip on YouTube, and I understood why they'd watched Taffin. Here is Bronholm delivering a line in just about the most extraordinary way conceivable, in only the way that Bronholm can. And it sounds as if, like, at the beginning of this very short clip, he's saying it's none of your business or something. And the word business is cut off. That's the way it actually appears in the film. It's not just a quirk of the clip. Here he is.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Ooh. That's that good way to make a point.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
They
I mean, he's
happy.
Shouting and he's elongating.
So you're a director, right? How would you feel once...
That'd be great. Cut, move on.
Exactly.
Done. In the bag. In the can.
Would you ask him to try it any other ways?
No. I mean, can I hear it again, even? Can we please hear it again?
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
I like that it's what she just said right back at her.
Elongated. Then maybe you shall have been living
We don't know that. What's the context? We don't know the context. Maybe that kind of emotion is justified. Is it what's going down in Taffin when that... Why?
I think it's in the last third of the film and things are getting tense and...
Clearly.
Maybe you shall have been... No, like, what other ways could he have said the line? He presumably
no other
he
way.
Started... Do you think he, like, built to that pitch... And started, well, and maybe you shouldn't be living here.
Well, that's,
started
I mean...
like that, and then built it up. Then
yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't be living here. Then maybe you shouldn't be living here.
No. That's, I mean, no.
How does he do it, then?
He's correctly, he's absolutely at the end of his tether.
Sure.
As, you know, as a director, and I know all about acting.
Yeah.
He's pushing it right to the very edge, and the next thing as an actor he would do is burst into tears.
Right.
There's nowhere else to go there. And they go, here, I'm so unhappy. That's the next thing you do on
then
the acting spectrum.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
There is other thing. Another thing he could do is,
well,
just start smashing everything up at that point, just freaking out and punching people, throwing furniture around, throwing vases, headbutting windows, just going, and doing a raspberry. That's what Brando would do.
And then puke.
Yes.
On himself. Let's just have him once more on his own again, James.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Yes.
Traveling tales, tales of traveling on the train, or an automobile, or an aeroplane. I want to know what your traveling tales
are. All aboard the Skylark!
It's very loud.
It's good. It's an aggressive, very aggressive, aggressively fun jingle.
Now, we're going to have a couple of traveling tales sections in the show today because we've got sort of two areas of traveling tales appearing. One, just various random traveling tales.
There'll
about
be a lot of tales to tell.
Oh, so many tales to tell about the travel.
Oh, there are.
And another area that is crazy train announcers, right? Mm. And this is turning into a bit of a thing with people identifying...
But this is exciting. This is a really exciting development that's happened in this narrative, this story, about this amazing train driver. Are you going to talk us through this?
Well, we're going to listen to him in just a second, but here's another one right now. This is from Ben. He says, "Greetings! I took this recording many years ago. This fantastic train manager, or conductor, always made me smile when he was on the tannoy, so I was very pleased that I managed to get him on tape. Apologies for the sound quality. You have to wait for the end to really get the full force of his personality. Bear in mind that this recording was taken during the day, probably around 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I believe it was the Bristol to Swansea train, but it was so long ago I can't really remember. But this is Nigel, the train manager, in action. Here he is.
Hello, everyone. This is Nigel, retail service manager, speaking. Just to let you know that the shop is still open, and we've still got those lovely hot snacks, cold snacks, hot drinks, cold drinks. Crisps, nuts, sweets, headsets for the onboard entertainment, books, magazines, playing cards, as I said on several occasions, so come on down, the price is right, be pleased to serve you. Thank you! Night, night!
Hey, look at that.
He gets a little chuckle there.
Wow,
from the passengers.
Of course he does. Of course he does. He was describing almost every single item in the shop.
I think he made a few up as well. Clean
bye
cards.
Bye.
Thank you. Night, night. He says
we did
at the
that.
End.
We did that on an old show, didn't we? Ways to say goodbye, ways to sign off.
Mm.
Bye. But that's a good one. I haven't quite heard it sung in that way before.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he really lifted the spirits of that train, don't you think?
It sounded like a party on the train.
What a great guy.
But the thing is that I should say at this point before we continue with these clips, I am someone who is naturally not that much of a fan of that kind of behaviour.
Why?
Because I am grumpy and a grumpy man and I like peace and quiet!
This is from Sergeant Mark Brown, Leeds Light Infantry Black Squadron, and he says, "Dearest Dr. Buckles and Head Surgeon Cornballs, I'm writing to you with special news. Last Sunday evening, I happened to be travelling from Peckham Rye to London Bridge, engrossed in a portable telephone conversation with a friend. I paid little attention to the announcement on boarding the train. Then, out of the corner of my ear, it dawned on me that it was the strange man slash robot that has featured in the past two shows. I aborted the telephone chat." These are clips that we played of the train announcer on this Peckham train. "I aborted the telephone chat with immediate effect. I have a clip for your pleasure and interview with said announcer." So Mark went up to the train announcer, as we had asked people to do, and had a little chat with him. So here's what happened.
"Excuse me.
Yeah.
Could you tell me, is it you who does the voice announcement?
Yeah.
It is. Do you realise that you're becoming famous on the radio?
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, which one?
Show called Adam and Joe.
And what station's that on?
It's on Six Music on a Saturday morning.
Oh, really?
You've been on twice now. And
what?
People
actually record it?
Yeah, people are recording you. And it's on the radio. They've had a debate whether you're actually a recorded voice. Or,
oh, right.
Or a real person. If you tune in at 10, you become a member of Black Squadron, an right. elite listening force, but that was between me and you.
Okay.
Well, I think you're going to become famous.
No, right.
Okay. Okay.
That's amazing,
that's
Sergeant Mark Brown. Good work. He should get some kind of award.
Well, he's immediately given a special Black Squadron commendation. That's incredible, though. What an amazing guy. And he'd clearly heard of the show. He was just being modest.
Of course he was. His name, the driver, is Ralph Zanellotti. He's been a train driver in and around London for the last 3 years. And I think, do we have another clip of Ralph? Here we go.
"Welcome aboard the 10 o'clock Six Music service to Adam and Joe via the Big British Castle."
No way.
So he reined himself in a little bit there, because sometimes when he says Peckham, it's Peckham. Peckham. Rye. But we got our own little jingle there from Mr. Zanellotti.
That is incredible. We're very privileged. Thank you. And what an amazing job you do. We salute you.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Now, sometimes on Text the Nation, we have a subject that generates so much correspondence that it seems criminally, ludicrously insane just to leave it alone there. And about 2 years ago, we did a thing on Text the Nation about public pretending, we called it. Little games you play with yourself when you're out and about just to, sort of charades you play. How would you describe it, Joe?
Well, it's sort of the theatre of public spaces, isn't it? And for instance, some of the good ones I remember from last time are if you're waiting for a friend in a particular public place, the friend doesn't turn up, and you start getting self-conscious about why you're standing there. Or, for instance, if you're in a restaurant alone, waiting to order, but your friend hasn't turned up, you might do some quite exaggerated watch looking at.
Yes, well, here
or
is...
Or some table tapping to make it clear to everyone around you that you're waiting for somebody.
Bit of public pretending. Here's Lauren. She's a girl from Yorkshire, and she's a new listener to the show. She says, "Hi, Adam and Joe. I heard your show for the first time yesterday on the podcast as my boyfriend listens to your show regularly. Anyway, I thought you were very funny, and you reminded me of odd things I do as well. Here are a few. When in an area in which I feel unsafe, I pretend that I am an undercover policewoman and talk into my collar so people will think I'm covering some important police job and I've got backup. I have actually done this and consider myself to be a normal person. And now I've written it down, it seems a bit mental. When my parents wouldn't allow me to have a dog, here's another example. When my parents wouldn't allow me to have a dog, I got over it by perusing the dog food aisle in supermarkets so that people would at least think I had a dog. I'm bored and I have a hangover," says Lauren.
I like the talking into your collar one. That's very good. I've got a confession to make. I used to, years ago, I had a charger for my, little MP3 player in my car. Mm-hmm. And it plugged into the cigarette lighter and it had one of those windy cables.
Sure.
And if I saw someone driving very badly or someone I was angry with, I would hold my phone in my hand and I would use the wiry cord to stretch between my hand and the dashboard and I'd talk into it as if I was a policeman. And it used to work because there's something about the wiry cord.
Looks official.
That looks official.
You must have
and
training.
People would look at me and then look again and look frightened
he's
and move
cord.
Away. He's a police. He's an undercover policeman. He's got a loopy cord.
Only the Fuzz Brigade have got the springy cords.
That's pathetic, isn't it? And I used to feel so pathetic after I did it. But then when people gave me the double take, I used to think, yes.
They were doing a double take thinking, that Wally thinks he's a policeman.
That Wally thinks he's a policeman.
Wally. Hey, look, darling, there's a Wally over there. He thinks he's a cop.
They'd be right. Here's one from Rhiann Owens. Hi, Adam and Joe. I thought a good idea for Text the Nation 1 week might be secret competition. So that's a sort of another way of saying public pretending.
It's a little subsection.
I was chatting to my brother about how sometimes I start races with other people in the general public. For example, if I get off the train at the same time as someone else, I think, I'll race you to the top of the stairs. And I get very competitive, even though the other person doesn't know they're in a race. My brother replied that he used to have a race called the Notting Hill Gate Derby. It had rules like no running and a start and finish line. Thought this might be a fun thing to ask the listeners. So that's public pretending. You're pretending you're in a race with your fellow commuters up the escalator to make your commute more exciting.
Yeah, they don't know about it and you do. The other thing I used to do, which maybe I talked about last time we did this, was a little similar to yours. And it's a tactic I use sometimes to avoid conversations with taxi drivers. You know, you get into a black cab. Mm. And what I used to do when I used to live in London and took more black cabs was listen to my MP3 player or whatever. But then I would make notes as if I was a kind of A&R guy. And I'm so busy, I've got to make notes about all the things I'm listening to. This is a good band. Gonna go far. We got to get them for the label. That kind of thing.
What?
Because
would you be like nodding your head along to the music?
That kind of thing. I'd be sort of
so it's all designed to
good lyrics. This band gonna be big.
Yeah. So you're aiming it at the driver. So you're assuming he's gonna look in the wing mirror.
He's gonna
and he sees this man nodding his head with his headphones in making notes.
Exactly. Oh, I better not talk to that geezer because he's a busy A&R man from a big record company. I'll just let him get on with it.
Podcast. That is all there is of the podcast. It is all over.
Yeah, they've been out sucking on licorice canes and kindling wood that they got from an old Indian man with a crow on his hat.
Good singing there, fellas. Somebody put the beans on.
Put the beans, cook up a mess of catfish and grits. We'll go skinny dipping in the gulch.
I'm going to make a new guitar out of this old turtle. I found an old turtle. I'm going to make a guitar out of it and write a song about turtles.
I'm going to go fetch me some snake oil and then pour it on a jackrabbit. And then hang out with the crazy priest from Sassafras.
BBC Six Music Podcasts.
If you liked Adam and Joe, why not try Jarvis Cocker's Six Music Show? Sundays from 4.
Six Music.